Number 1. Washington Park. You walk home from the Roosevelt Clinic through the Arboretum, humming your new music. The Rachmaninoff Vespers, which your choir will perform in May, though to your thinking, an all-night vigil should be sung on the winter solstice. Vigil, a watch kept on the night before. You love the idea of keeping watch. You don't exactly believe it, but you also love the idea of being watched over, preferably by an angel. High above, a single fizzed whistle, poignant, wistful, alone. Then, from across the meadow, an answer. Not angels, varied thrushes. Number 2, Washington Park. You walk home from the Heart Center wearing a Holter heart monitor. The vernal equinox, 41 degrees and raining. So much for the first day of spring. Crocuses collapse, siskins shiver, even the whirring bush tits look bedraggled. But it's not getting to you, because every day you're singing Rachmaninoff. The melodies have settled in your souls. Number 3, Washington Park. You walk home from the Heart Center wearing a 30-day heart monitor. You're not too worried. There's no heart disease in your family. Red wings shrill as you hum the Bolgoro Dietze. It starts in a slow, solemn whisper and then soars into an exalted alto duet. You would love to sing that duet, but Fred will recruit professionals. You altos joke, Rachmaninoff must have had an alto mistress, because the Vespers gives all the gorgeous melodies to altos. The sopranos, who normally get all the gorgeous melodies, joke that they don't mind being your accessories, but they do. When you tie your raincoat around your waist, it makes the sticky things pull, which makes you hunch over, which makes you think about old age. A sunny day in a birdie wetland, at least you'll be able to do this when you're old. You think, I suppose it's time to think about death. And that's enough of that. Number 4, Discovery Park. Seattle, they say, has 4 seasons. Summer, fall, winter, and disappointment. But this May morning is perfect, with savanna sparrows in the South Meadows grasses, hummingbirds on the North Meadows huckleberries, and down below, the Puget Sound blissing out. On the way home, you notice a message from a Dr. P, a French name that sounds like petit filet. On the landline is a second message from Dr. P, There was a reading that requires follow-up. When you reach Dr. P, he asks you to come in to the emergency room. What, now? You're almost done with the 30 days. You will be seeing Dr. M. Now. There was a reading of 3.8 seconds with no heartbeat. Really? Friday or Saturday? He doesn't know. That's so interesting, you say. Any way you can find out? He says, you had no blood pressure for almost 4 seconds. Like, you should know what that means. You will later learn that blood can pool in your heart. It might form a clot. That clot might shoot through your arteries to your brain. But you don't know that. You wonder if this means your life is about to change. You wonder if you should cancel your run on Tuesday. You wonder if your heart could have stopped, like in your sleep. But no, this is some kind of fluke. There's no heart disease in your family. Number 5, University Medical Center, emergency room. They're expecting you. A technician in China blue scrubs takes your vitals, sits you in a wheelchair, and wheels you to your cubicle, as if you're a sick person. In fact, you will not be allowed to walk on your own 2 feet after this. You now belong to them. Two China blues wheel in a machine, stick little white flags all over you, chest, ribs, ankles, clip on 12 combed out color-coded leads, take a reading, peer at the pink paper, take a second reading, and then unhook in perfect reverse sequence, like they're unhooking jumper cables. You wonder what would happen if they got one out of order. Another China blue attaches 8 color-coded leads from the overhead monitor to 8 of your little flags. Then 2 starched white coats sail in. Dr. P, pale with delicate glasses and plump French lips, grazes your hand with 4 fingers. His resident, the man with 2 first names, ha-ha, Chris Mark, Bob George, grins and nods. Everything is tidy and technical and interesting. Your flannel blanket is warm, and you're being fawned over by 2 benevolent starched white demigods. You start to feel special. Dr. P displays the offending record. See? Little hill, but no valley. It seems to please him. Maybe it's how unambiguous that flat line is. He draws a 4-celled oval, atria, ventricles, and right here, he gouges the AV node between them. So tiny, anything can go wrong. In an aside, he mentions that every cell of the ventricle is programmed to beat. Even when there's no signal, they'll contract, albeit slowly. But your ventricle did nothing. You say, huh. You think, why's that? But you don't ask. Instead, you ask again whether the flatline was from Friday or Saturday, and this elicits another, you didn't have any blood pressure for almost 4 seconds. You want to say, well, I never have much blood pressure, so I didn't really miss it. But you decide he won't find that funny. You start to explain that you want to know because it must have been Saturday, and that was an accidental reading, so you were probably moving, so it's probably a fluke. When the man with two first names shoots his finger at the monitor and cries, "Look, it's doing it!" And he lopes out of the room. So much for the fluke theory. The resident lopes back in, waving a stream of pink paper. Another 4 seconds. They pore over it. They look happy. Men at work. You hear type 2 and third degree, total heart block. You think, uh-oh. The resident asks if you felt it. They lean in. Maybe, you say, sort of, a little twinge, like a shift or a blip. Hard to describe, but you wouldn't have noticed it. A twinge? A shift? A blip? Something like that. The resident looks enthralled. You think, it must have been that Friday night one. You belong to them. You will be evaluated for a pacemaker, and lucky you, Dr. W., the famed electrophysiologist, a genius, the resident says, has an opening at 10 a.m. tomorrow. But you're only being evaluated, right? Nods and handshakes, and the starched white coats sigh out the door. Does this mean you'll miss choir practice on Wednesday? More wonderful workers. These people are all so nice. Two China blues shoot an X-ray from the doorway. A pastel pattern sets an IV in your left arm. Another China blue removes the monitor's leads, sticks two additional tabs to your rib cage, and clips on leads from a transistor-sized box. You wait for the transporter because you can no longer walk. The room ticks. Your blue jeans are uncomfortable. You want to get something to read, but it's as though your agency sighed out the door with the starched white coats. So you lie there. You think about asking the China Blue if you can hold the box for her so she can get back to what she was doing. But you don't. You belong to them. Number 6, University Medical Center, Cardiology Wing. A sunny late afternoon in a bright, polished unit where they've just discharged their last patient. Jubilation! A semicircle of three good witches welcome you with giggles, saying, "You don't look like their 65-year-old heart patient." Because you aren't. They hand you off to another giggling witch and her freckled shadow, who wish you to your room and wish off your gown, crying, "Privacy out the window!" They unhook the black box's leads, add two more electrodes, 18 now and counting, and attach the leads from a small box that will transmit wirelessly, continuously. Like your heart really is on the verge? Like you can't be unplugged for even a second? Pretty soon, you're all laughing. They can't get the box through the slit in the gown to put it in the chest pocket. They hack away, but not one of these brand new scissors can cut cotton. Finally, they just force it. You will discover later, when someone else does it, that the wires unplug to feed through that slit. That someone will ask, "What happened to your gown?" Next up, X-ray. You wonder what happened to the one they took an hour ago. The transporter helps you into the wheelchair, collects a giant Kelly Green binder, places it on your cardiac patient lap, and wheels you down to a featureless basement hallway. You wish you had something to read. At least she didn't park you facing the wall like that other guy. You must look feeble because the X-ray tech asks if you can stand, if you can grasp the bar, if you can turn around. But he's soft and quiet. His room is dark. You like it there. Back upstairs, they unhook, rehook, and order dinner. Nothing by mouth after midnight, just in case. Sometime in the night, you think, "My heart. I am being asked to pay attention to my heart. Is it good enough? Am I keeping a good enough heart?" You think about how much love you waste, the love you receive, but especially the love you could be giving. You could be more forgiving. By morning, you really are the cardiac patient. Painful IV, burning potassium drip, vitals at midnight and 4 a.m., blood draw at 6. You hurt, you're hungry, and you're exhausted. A Dr. K, a tall, handsome track star with square black glasses, strides in and informs you that it wasn't thyroid or electrolytes, like he knew it wouldn't be. So you do need a pacemaker. He's articulate, warm, informative, upbeat, also inexorable. They all are. Not unkind, just guided missiles. Paperwork and a pen. Ghastly possible outcomes. You sign. You're going to miss choir practice. Number 7, University Medical Center, surgery. In pre-surgery, a bright-eyed, blue hair-netted witch welcomes you as though you're her favorite little sister. She fits you with your own blue hairnet, which she rests right across your eyelids. Dr. W. enters wearing operating gear. Serious brown eyes, a kind smile, and the air of, well, a genius. He takes your hand and explains what will happen without impatience or condescension, answering every question as though you are intelligent enough to understand. You love him. In the operating theater, stainless steel, sinks, machines, counters, tubes, wire, giant lights. They pull down your gown and peel off electrodes, remarking on the number. "You won't need these anymore," they say. "Good news," you think. Apologizing, they swab on buckets of cold, burnt orange antiseptic, like the iodine your mother used to use. It runs down your sides and pools in your armpits. They scrub. They drape a papery turquoise sheet over your body and insert clear plastic tubes into your nose, then a shot, and you plunge into something like marzipan. You drift awake, deep voices calm, intense, a sacred space. They are monks. You drift off humming the great doxology. You hear them again. Something's wrong. The genius is disturbed. A pumping pressure on your chest, very firm, over and over, like they're trying to flatten the pacemaker. They don't like that you're oozing. Their word, oozing. You love them all so much. In recovery, you ask what happened. The bright-eyed witch doesn't know what you mean. You say, what were they concerned about? You heard that? She looks flustered. You're not supposed to wake up. Dr. W. wasn't happy about the placement of the wires. He did the ventricle 3 times and the atrium 2x. Yikes. You're glad he didn't perforate anything. You're glad it's over. Number 8, University Medical Center, Cardiology Wing. That night, you can't get the third movement, Blessed is the Man, out of your head. Alleluia. These melodies are ancient Slavic folk tunes which Rachmaninoff draped in lush harmonies. Before Orthodoxy, these folk tunes were sacred. When you sing them, you feel holy. You've ignored your heart. You've simply pushed. Now it's assisted. Will the assistant help you pay attention? Keep a good heart. Number 9, the future. At follow-up, Dr. W. will tell you that you don't have heart disease. You have a simple electrical problem. As long as you're resuscitated after cardiac arrest, you should live a long, healthy life. You will not ask why you might have cardiac arrest. You will not ask how likely it is that you might have cardiac arrest. Can a simple electrical problem cause cardiac arrest? You will decide you have no need to know. What difference does it make? Seriously, it's none of your business. It's out of your hands. 10 days later, the choir will perform Rachmaninoff. You will move gingerly. You will feel the weight of the music on your chest. You all will sing like angels. Those gorgeous alto melodies will make people weep. And for a while, your heartbeats will remind you, thanks for music. Thanks for birds. Thanks for China blues. white coats, attendants, techs, and witches. Thanks for everything.